So today we're going to attempt to talk about faith as a path to liberation in an age of collapse. How's that sound? How does it sound, folks online? I see hearts to Misha. Thumbs up. So the reality is, we are living in an age in which trust, if it's not dissolving, has dissolved. But it doesn't even sound like news anymore. In fact, political polarization has deepened into moral hostility. The World Health Organization, to which I believe the United States is no longer a member, has identified loneliness as a global public health concern. Global. Not European, not American, global. Economic instability, artificial or real, fuels anxiety. Artificial intelligence now produces highly synthetic realities, destabilizing the sense of what is real. We're definitely in the period of unreality. Unreality, as the Advaita Vedanta Hindus would describe it, unreality. And the recognition is, this is not merely a technological crisis. It's not. It's a crisis of the epistemology of meaning. And here we want to talk about faith. I wonder what the French philosophers like Jean-Paul Sartre will say about meaning in this time. Especially the existentialists. What would they say? So in such a world, the Buddha's teaching on faith, saddha, faith, becomes urgently relevant. Urgently relevant. And I'm looking at you online. Urgently relevant. Can you see me? Can you feel me? This is not devotional language. Because the Buddha said, when suffering is fully understood, when suffering is fully understood, not avoided, fully understood, not bypassed, fully metabolized, it becomes the very condition for faith. Don't hide, I can see you. You're looking back. So the point is, Liberation is not random. That's the good news. Liberation is not random. Liberation is not bestowed on me because of my dreadlocks. I'd like to think that. Liberation is based on conducive causes and conditions that I cultivate with intention and sincerity, especially when no one's watching. There's no performance, no audience. So it's important to understand what the meaning of the word faith is. Not according to the Webster's dictionary, but exactly how the Buddha meant it. So for that, we go to the etymology of the word. The Pali word sada, sada, faith, is derived from the word sraddha. Is this familiar to anyone? There might be some Pali scholars here. Sraddha. Sraddha meaning srad, the heart, trust, truth. Srad means the heart, trust, truth. Da means to place. Therefore, faith means to place the heart upon what's true. To place the heart on what is true. This is not blind belief. This is not the suppression of doubt. This is not the suppression of doubt. This is a courageous and trusting, grounded in discernment. So I reflected on the question, if faith is to place the heart on what is true, then what is true? Is that a fair question? What we're deconstructing together. Is this a fair question? Okay. So what is true? And there are many advanced practitioners here. I'm only repeating what you already know. This is what the Buddha said about what is true. There is samutisaka, conventional truth. Conventional truth. Which is the realm of the person, the realm of the self, of nationhood, of identity, whether you're blood or crip. Judge. Then there's ultimate truth. Ultimate truth is not subject to my interpretation or yours. It is ultimate. It's independently originated. some regards. And the ultimate truth the Buddha taught is summarized in the three marks: impermanence. Everything is impermanent, including the Sangha today. It will end in approximately 59 minutes, unless I am efficient with time. I am impermanent, and I hope I never have to come back, that I accumulate enough merit not to return. You are impermanent. This building is impermanent. How you're feeling now is absolutely impermanent. The second is, everything will be unsatisfactory. The economists call it diminishing returns. Everything you take for granted now was once a prized desire. Don't look at your partner if they're sitting next to you. So why is it unsatisfactory now? Because this is ultimate truth. And the third is, there is no permanent self. Now imagine this. If you were born in Seattle, imagine if you were now born in Ulaanbaatar to the same parents. Would you be the same person? If you were born in Kenya to the same parents, would you have the same life path? If you were born in Jamaica to the same parents, would you be the same Leslie? But you do believe, and you're clinging onto this identity that is Leslie now, isn't it? So where does faith fit into this chain of transcendental dependent origination? It comes right after suffering. Faith comes right after suffering. So do you suffer today when you watch the news? When you go to your TikTok feed, your Instagram feed, and everything that was once solid around you is no longer. Everything that was once solid is no longer. But remember, the Buddha said, out of suffering comes faith. Because faith is the initiating condition in this liberation chain. From suffering, I'm tired of this, and I don't know what to do. So I'm going to turn within. Yay, I found myself, faith. Joy, that leads to joy. Wow, I'm a different person. I'm speaking about my experience. No, you can't be married anymore. I know it's your second divorce, but you're going to have to leave. And there's a little girl. But no. Well, if you don't, this attachment continues. Okay, I submit. Wow, this feels good. No more toxicity. Wow, I'm at the silent retreat. Rapture. By Jove, there's no better experience than silence, tranquility. And that tranquility brings happiness because I no longer have to explain myself. I no longer have to people please. The world outside doesn't matter. Concentration. I'm only focused on things that are light to liberation and support my liberation. And if it doesn't, it's a complete waste of my time or its practice. I'm speaking of my own recovery from narcissistic abuse and the traumas that I lived under for decades. So with concentration comes knowledge and vision. No one can shake my confidence because study, practice, realize. When you realize, it's experiential. No one can take it away. And the Dharma, it's all about self-initiation. No one can come and say you're not bodhicitta. But we know by the way you behave, or as the Christians would say, by their fruits shall they be known. And then comes disenchantment. Nothing outside is interesting. It's all illusion. But I'm still in the mundane world. And I'm aware of my delusions and attachments. Then dispassion. The only thing that matters is the inner world and doing no harm. Which leads to liberation. Nothing outside me can entangle me. Nothing. And that leads to liberation and the knowledge of liberation. So faith brings the third noble truth into very sharp focus. Because suffering, dukkha, conditions faith. Because after you found out for yourself, no one can take that from you. It's now a real experience. You've verified it for yourself. Ehipasiko. Joy conditions concentration, samadhi. Concentration conditions insight. So concentration is that I'm aware the world is burning, but I'm also aware that I went through my own burning and freed myself from burning. Insight conditions disenchantment. I see the nature of reality. I'm not caught up in this game. I do not consent. I do not participate in these shenanigans. No enmeshment. To see the true nature of reality, like Neo on the Matrix. I'm not kidding. Because when compassion is fully embraced, in my experience, it unlocks an unpremeditated wisdom. That is conditioned on compassion. Sort of the warranty that protects you from having an open heart. What protects your open heart? Protects you from having a closed heart. That's a wisdom that's more effective than any Machiavellian strategy. That's how Gandhi defeated the British. Faith and nonviolence. Let's see them off as friends. What is he talking about? See them off as friends. Because to overcome hate is, to me, this is not a Dharmic quote, the greatest virtue. To overcome hate in oneself. Therefore, one is not subject to hate in the world. So we know that the brain generates models and updates them. That's neuroscience. Meaning we do not perceive raw reality. We perceive interpretations. All of us. The conditioned mind. And the Buddha described that as contact, feeling, craving, clinging, becoming. And so these momentary experiences feel not very solid and may induce anxiety, which is why the Buddha says faith is required to observe the process of reality without fear. Faith is necessary to process the reality around all of us today. Faith is resting in what is true. So I'm asking you silently to answer this for yourself. What is true for you? When you consider the meaning of the word faith. What is true for you at a time of great political polarization and affective hostility? Because polarization reinforces dualism. Faith, non-dualism. Polarization, separation. Faith, no separation. Faith is also necessary to engage with the moments as they arise. Because we do know the Pali word santata, there is no real continuity. Continuity is a mind construct. There is only a series of now moments that feel strung together as what I call my life. But there are moments of discrete subatomic now moments. So the mind wants to cling to certainty in the future. But reality happens in abstract, non-continual, subatomic moments. And so faith is the boat that takes you moment to moment in resting in what is true, what is unknown, what is unseen. What is independently generated, not dependent on causes and conditions. Now, this is difficult to talk about in the time of great trauma. And trauma creates hypervigilance, distrust, dissociation. Am I talking to you or am I talking to myself? I want to make sure I'm talking to you. Is this resonating? Is this resonating? Should we share? Oh, Carol, I got the thumbs up from Carol. Yay. Hypervigilance. Because trauma conditions defensiveness. Not like me. Just like me. Not like me. Just like me. So why does faith sound Pollyanna, impractical? Faith is not the denial of suffering. And at least the way the Buddha meant it, is not a reliance on grace and favor. I know Tim talked about it recently. Or when he talks about the types of faith, Per Sharon Salzberg, it all comes down to embodiment. In my experience, the Dharma and the path to liberation is all about embodiment. Not just practice. So in what ways are you an embodiment of doing no harm based on your faith in the period and time of great harm? It is no surprise that the civil rights movement was possible because a number of people realized the only way out of this is through a moral embodiment of goodness. Not anger, not righteous indignation, not justified hate, not righteous indignation, an angry social justice, but a direct embodiment of what it means to rest in what is true. So if you're angry, it's justified. But it's not going to be the path to your faith or your liberation. If you feel despondent, it's justified. But it's definitely not going to lead you to your faith rooted in liberation in this lifetime. At least that's what I'm aiming for. If you feel a strong sense for justice, sure, why not? But how's that going to get in the way of your faith? Because faith, with right view, requires doing no harm. We cannot defeat darkness with darkness. Or what Carl Jung talks about, the shadow self. And everything I'm talking about is in the individual. I'm not talking about the systems. Because as Judah Krishnamurti said, you are the world, and the world is you. The world doesn't exist without you. Or your awareness of it, let's say. So in conclusion, rested in what is true, not what feels good. But what is true? resting in what is true. Signals an availability for what is true, for truth. Not Maya, illusion. Because when you see truth in yourself, you see truth in everything. So if I come to you and I want to harm you, your truth exposes my harmful nature immediately. That's the courage of faith. We've all seen Bhante Pananaka and the other monks on their walk. What has he been talking about? Very soft-spoken, but with the courage of Hannibal or Attila or Alexander the Great. Because it is rooted in resting in what is true. If you want to harm me, and I look at you with all your harm, with love and acceptance, what does that do to your harm? Not naivete. You're overcome. Defeated. So faith, resting in what is true. What is true? What is true? What is true? Thank you for your time and attention. We'll open it up for some questions, deconstruction, pushback, personal experience. All is welcome, knowing we're doing no harm.
Oh, yeah. Sure, sure. I'm trying to understand a little better how suffering leads to the conditions for faith. And from your talk, the understanding that I got was because the Buddha described suffering as one of the three marks. And in the first noble truth, when we experience suffering ourselves, then we gain a deeper experiential first-hand understanding of what the Buddha was describing, which increases our faith in the three jewels and the teachings. So is that the right way to think about it, or are there some other mechanisms that lead to moving from suffering to faith?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. Can we deconstruct it together?
Sure, yeah.
Wonderful. So what is faith to you?
I really liked your description in the talk of resting your heart on what is true. I think another maybe more practical way of thinking about it that I've had in the past is like having confidence that the practice that I'm doing and the teachings are going to lead to what I'm expecting them to. An expectation of like some type of good outcome to happen if I do the steps.
How did you come to that point?
Of having that expectation?
And the confidence?
I can't say for sure that I have like an unwavering confidence. It like comes and goes a little bit. But I feel like initially when I was first drawn to the practice, It was like a friend of mine who introduced me to it, and I was just like very curious about it, and I found the meditations very interesting and fascinating. And then later on, I stuck with it for a few years, and I felt like it supported me in difficult times in my life. So
it supported you when?
In difficult times.
How did it support you in difficult times?
Like there were a couple instances where I was experiencing sort of overwhelming emotions that I didn't really have the tools or the ability to deal with before that. But on a couple such instances, I decided to sit with the emotions and I practiced with them. And in all of those cases, I felt like it revealed something to me that was true, that I was maybe running away from before. Well, that's the feeling that I got at least. And the emotion also washed away and I was left with both a lightness and a greater understanding of maybe more about my own psychology and how things work.
Beautiful. What's your name again?
It's Adhyan.
Adhyan.
Yeah.
So you got to the end of your suffering because there was nothing else your ego could do. And at that moment, your friend said, hey, come, Dharma. And you probably said no, but you gave it a go. And in that moment, you realized you had relief because you were dealing with what was true about your delusions, your greed and your hatred. That knowing, when sustained, what happens?
Yeah, I guess that would lead to the confidence.
Don't guess. Listen to what is true. Pause. No rush.
Yeah.
Let me ask you the question again. The way you were practiced in letting your different emotions overwhelm you, when you came to the practice, what did it do for you? It gave you confidence. But then you went back to the old way. So what happens when you sustain your practice, which develops your own confidence, not rooted in another person's projection? What happens to it?
It grows.
Why?
Because the more times that it happens in my life that I was able to see what's true instead of running away from it.
See, your own wisdom. Yeah. Your own wisdom. Find out for yourself. Find out for yourself. Because only you can embody truth. You can pretend to practice, or you can avail yourself to the practice. And as Thayer would say, as long as you do your part, the Dharma does its part. That's the mystery of the Dharma. Do you see?
Yeah, I see.
Do you see?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yes.
Yes?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your talk. That was really lovely. It really resonated with the part where you brought in embodiment, because I think that I've been realizing that embodiment is the only way I can experience truth. And I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit more about the through line to faith, because I think I might have lost a little bit as you were talking.
So there's a Christian quote that says, when faith is most trying is when it's most rewarding. So in my case, if I may use that, the faith has come from having no options. No one to turn to, nothing to turn to. Nothing else can be done. And just the reality of whatever scenario is there. And when you're faced with the inevitability of reality, what do you do? You accept it first, no? Just this. And in that acceptance, there's a halving of the strife, the second arrow. And in that acceptance in that moment, there is relief. That relief is the Dhamma giving you the next rung. Remember, it's all in the present. The present is unknown. But it's always oscillating. So with surrender, I'm going to quantum physics a little bit. There's some quantum physicists here. There is a corresponding oscillation. Or in physics, what's known as action, reaction, inevitable. That's a natural law. So in that acceptance, I'm not giving up, but okay. The mystery of the Dharma shows up to take the next step in acceptance and the next step in acceptance. So there's less enmeshment in the story. There's less enmeshment in, this is happening to me. To me. This is happening and it's not pleasant. And I'm just going to sit and accept it for now. And in that sitting where there's no strife, what happens? I'm asking you.
When the strife is gone, that's when acceptance happens.
And then what happens?
The suffering lessens.
Don't think, just listen. What happens when the suffering lessens? Don't think, listen.
Ask it again.
What happens when the suffering lessens after you've accepted?
Peace.
And when there is peace, what happens?
Joy.
When there's peace and joy despite your suffering, what happens?
The ability to move on.
That's your wisdom. Because you stopped to listen. You didn't get into papancha mind, the proliferation. You stopped, you took in a deep breath. You knew what your mind was saying. The suffering. And you went deeper. And where did our wisdom come from? You! Me! Because I am you. And you are me. So awakening is available to anyone and everyone. I like you. You have a kind face. You see? Do you see? Do you see? Do you see? The diamond that cuts through all illusion. Because the Four Noble Truths ennoble us. The Four Noble Truths ennobles you. Noble. The perfume of blamelessness that comes from accepting and dancing with it. Philip Moffat, Neo from the Matrix. I look like I'm jesting. I jest not. Energy gone. No conflict. When you pause, all the wisdom you need is within. Don't outsource your authority. Do you see?
do. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Is there anyone online? Before we get another question, anyone online have a question? How you doing? Kathy.
Hi, Nina. Thank you for everything. This has all been so interesting and confusing. And
I'm confused too.
Yeah. See, because it seems I'm all for this. I'm on board here, but is we kind of cut away the edges of where and what we're going to be including in this present moment experience of having faith. It seems like we're standing on a little teeny piece of tile. I mean, if we're going to live in the present moment, well, it's all we can do, but I guess most of the time we don't know it. But then I want to, basically, I believe in love. I want the people around me to feel love. I want to feel love toward other people. But it's scary, you know, because, I guess I'm projecting difficulties down the road that are not here now. So maybe my difficulty is, I don't know, you have some suggestions here.
That's a very powerful question. I don't know if I have an answer, but I'll share some reflections. Is that fair, Kathy?
Yeah, great.
You see, one has come to the understanding that it's impossible to give others what you don't have. So if someone is projecting wickedness, unkindness, as you're describing, the first victim of that wickedness and unkindness is the self.
Amen.
Because when you have accepted and gone beyond your ignorance, you know that it's ignorant to hurt another person. Because to hurt another person means you hurt yourself first. So when you see someone hurting someone else, you know that's not strength. It is ignorance. As the Buddha said it. And what would you feel for me when you notice my ignorance, Kathy? I'm asking you.
I would feel compassion.
You see? Do you see what you just said, Kathy?
Well, I'm trying to look good.
You look great. There's no one like you. Because that's the wisdom you just shared. Compassion. Can you imagine having compassion for me, this wicked man, doing this wicked thing? And in that moment, rather than saying, I'm afraid or I'm intimidated, you say, oh, poor Nana. What does that do to your fear in that moment? When you see me as the wicked 6-year-old stuck in this traumatized body meeting out wickedness. And in that moment when you offer me compassion, what happens to you? I'm asking you, Kathy.
Well, I think I would feel pretty safe. I think I would feel on better ground than if I had reacted with fear or pushing away.
Okay, that's what you think. Now, what do you feel?
Offering compassion to some wild, crazy person. Let's see. Sorry, Nana.
I love your humor. It's great.
It works great when people around the grocery store, or unfortunate people. There's millions, trillions of them. It's kind of a release. It's just kind of a warm feeling.
Exactly. In that moment when you offer me compassion, you're free from being enmeshed with suffering. I cannot intimidate you when you feel compassion for me. Oh, poor Nana. Or as they say in the South, bless your heart. Do you see, Kathy?
Yeah. This is helpful, thanks.
So my wickedness is evidence of my deep enmeshment with dukkha and ignorance, avijja. And the whole point of this journey is to be free from ignorance. Do you see?
Yeah. So how come all those, there's so many people running around outside who don't get it?
You know, there's a saying that the New York Times is written at the fourth grade reading level, right? That doesn't mean that the editors think people can't read above the fourth grade reading level. Similarly, can you imagine the accumulated merit and the courses and conditions that have given Kathy the privilege and the potential for awakening in this lifetime?
Is that
a privilege? Say again?
Yeah, it's a tremendous privilege, a possibility, I hope.
So when I, Kathy, see someone struggling, then my empathy is deep because I know they would have to come back and come back and come back until they've accumulated enough merit to say, enough with this dukkha. Do you see?
Yeah.
What happens with future dukkha? I know the best way to predict the future is to look at exactly what I'm doing right now. If I want to know what the future is like, what am I doing right now? Am I doing harm? No. Am I doing harm? Yes. So are you doing harm by worried about the future dukkha? Are you accepting that there might be future dukkha, but you're still rooted in the now? I don't know. What do you think, Kathy?
Well, I'm working on this. I'm working on not worrying about the future. And, I believe that we can really only respond to the minute in front of us, the second in front of us. That's not a matter of faith. It's just, I keep seeing it as I get older, you know? I think responding with kindness in the moment that we're faced with and worrying about future dukkha probably not going to help us very much. It's just got to stay with the... Well, me, I just got to stay with what I have right here in front of me.
Because what happens when you worry about future dukkha?
Oh, I get all unhappy and uncomfortable inside. My tummy hurts. I start to fidget, etc.
Do you want to keep doing that?
Oh, no.
So acceptance. There might be suffering in the future. But as long as I'm doing no harm, then I'm okay with myself right now.
Yeah.
Do you see?
Yeah. Yeah. I like it.
Thank you, Kathy. Maybe one more before we wrap up. One more, then we turn it over for announcements. One more.
Thanks.
Oh, there's one online too. Go ahead.
Oh, there's one online too?
Yeah, but go for it. Go for it.
So you quoted the Matrix a few times, and it's a very Buddhist movie, and it's a very Buddhist movie. And actually, for the not a joke, but sometimes I wonder if like someone illuminated see the world, you know, with like kind of line of codes, everything is broken down to like probably not, but something, maybe it's something like that. Okay, so my question is, in the movie, Neo is is given the option to choose, you know, red pill, blue pill. So the jump on the faith comes from someone else. Maybe Neo is suffering, but the influx for taking a leap and taking the path is given by someone else. Today and last week as well, it was more presented as something that's very personal, like you suffer and you have to realize for yourself that you want the end of this suffering and exit the mundane loop of suffering. So basically my question is, is the faith really something personal that comes really from like oneself, or can it come from someone else? And maybe the next question is, can any of us try to, or maybe should not, help others to have faith? What does the Buddha said about, and maybe now it's almost like proselytism, like maybe Buddha said like you should not try to like share my words. I'm curious about how faith really starts.
Those are a powerful question. I don't know if I have all the answers, but here it is. So Ajahn Chah said, when you sit, you get still, wonderful animals show up. Neo, before coming into contact with Zion, was already neurodivergent. He was already non-typical. He didn't fit in. He knew he was different. He was already questioning the framework he lived in. You already was. This doesn't make sense. You know, the white picket fence, there's got to be more. Do you remember in his training, Morpheus said, what are you waiting for? Looks like you're waiting for something. And this is where the refuges come in. Yes, only you can awaken, but we take refuge in the example of the Buddha. The Buddha was a mere mortal who sat and discovered ultimate reality. If that's too abstract, then the Dhammas. And if that's too abstract, because remember, great spiritual master Dipama woke up spontaneously, yes? She had suffering, of course. She didn't go to Oxford. And if that's too abstract, then the Sangha. And in the Sangha, you might find a Kalyanamita or a teacher. The teacher or the Kalyanamita or the Dharma, or the Buddha, are mere examples showing you it is possible. But it's not doing it for you. It's not like watching Seinfeld, and then you hear the audience laughter, then you laugh too, right? Ha 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 ha, ha 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 ha. No, this is the real thing. So the Buddha, the Dharma, and Sangha are examples to enable your own journey. In the same way Neo had Morpheus, but Morpheus didn't make Neo. Morpheus needed Neo. The oracle didn't make Neo. The oracle confirmed Neo. Am I talking to you? Yes?
Yeah, I see what you mean, but you already knew in a way.
Just like you already know, I'm talking to you. Just like you, mon frère. Eh? Mon frère, on dit quoi? You already know. Je comprends? Merci. One online, I think it was Misha, and then we'll turn it over.
Thank you so much for this evening's talk. I really appreciate you bringing faith into this space, because I feel in these kind of spaces that faith is kind of like not, it's like shied away from. So just speaking for myself, I, like when I was growing up, was really angry about history, about everything that has happened in history, and was a young angry activist, student activist in the 90s. And I felt like a lot of the faith that I saw around me was really spiritual bypassing. Like, I'm an extremely faithful person, like recovering Catholic. But I felt like a lot of it was spiritual bypassing, and there was this like desire to make reason out of suffering, or to make, you know, make sense of it, or like rely on some grand plan out somewhere of why these things had to happen for X, whatever X was. And so for me, like where I've really found faith in this practice is in this practice and in that moment to moment, just beginning again. And no matter how hard the moment is, I have faith now in my practice that no matter what it is, I can get through it. And it's not, I think one place that I think folks get tripped up when I try to like share with them my practice is this word acceptance. People think that acceptance means that either I'm like, you know, something can be absolutely wrong, and I have to accept that that is what is true right now. It doesn't mean I like it. It doesn't mean it's okay. It doesn't mean that I'm excusing it in any way. It just means that this is what is, and it is what is here right now. And all I can do is figure out, how does that feel in my body? What does that bring up for me? What can I do in this moment for me to take care of myself? And like you said, to not cause harm in this moment. And so for me, like the faith that I've been able to build in my practice came from just beginning again and beginning again and beginning again through some really hard moments, but it is there. And you know, I don't get it right every time. There are some times when I take the blue pill, but I try to take the red pill more than the blue pill these days. But so I just wanted to thank you.
Wow, Misha, that's really powerful. Begin again. That deals with that santata, this force continuity. And beginning again helps to confirm and embody. Is that what you're saying, Misha? That's what I'm hearing. And I have a lot of respect for your practice. That's what it is. Beginning again. Yeah?
All we can do, moment to moment.
Wow. Thank you, Misha. Good to see you. All right. Well, I want to thank you for your kind attention. Before we split, can we sit for about 15 to 20 seconds and offer the merit of our practice? And if there's anyone you want to hold dear, anyone you want to offer merit to, just hold it energetically. May the merit of our practice free sentient beings wherever they may be. May we always be happy. May we always rest in faith. Sadhu, 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 sadhu. Thank you all. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.